You're on, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman. The next thing is the alternatives update. We have taken an immense amount of material and finally distilled it into alternatives for the our legal requirement to mitigate adverse effects on habitat. Go ahead, Michelle.
Thanks. So there's a presentation. There's a couple things in your binder on this topic. There's a document, number 3, that goes through these alternatives in some detail, provides a number of maps, coordinates for the different areas, kind of some rationale and discussions that have been had at the committee and the plan development team level. So hopefully if there's sort of detailed questions about any of these options, they can be addressed in this document, or I'm happy to take them as well. And then the presentation is a separate document, number 5. And really what I was trying to do when I put this together was sort of tell the story of how we got to where we are in terms of the range of adverse effects minimization options and how they were combined into alternatives. And the, sort of the primary, there's two things that we were hoping for the council to get out of today's discussion. And the first was just kind of to bring everybody up to speed on what the Habitat Committee has been working on in this regard, and also to provide an opportunity for sort of early feedback. I'm going to go through sort of at the end of this presentation kind of what are the next steps in terms of coordinating with the groundfish elements of the process, and then bringing the council a set of alternatives for adoption that encompasses both groundfish and habitat considerations. So a lot of this can be kind of gone through really quickly because Dave touched on a number of these topics already, but I'm just going to highlight some of the relevant goals and objectives that relate to the adverse effects minimization options and alternatives, go through some highlights of the SASE approach, and mostly providing this kind of for reference for those of you who weren't a part of the council when we developed that model and when we first started using it to develop options. Then kind of explaining sort of how we went from the outputs of SASE to a set of management options, and then specifically going through the different areas and what the options are for those, and then what are the next steps. I'm not going to read these again. You can read them on the slide. But the kind of the main thing is that the council and Omnibus Amendment 2 wanted to think about integrating adverse effects minimization across all its FMPs, and so that's why we developed this swept area seabed impact approach that considers all gears and sort of all habitats and areas, and was designed to help us identify sort of focus areas for further investigation and work. So the figure shows you the domain of SASE, which is actually quite large. And it encompasses basically all the fishing effort that's bottom tending in the Northeast region. We spent between 3 and 4 years developing this approach. I should really say late 2007. And we presented the Local Indicators Fishing Association results that come out of this model to the Habitat Committee in June of 2010. The purpose of SASE is to allow us, again, to compare fishing impacts across different types of gears and across different areas. There's a number of elements of the approach. There was a vulnerability assessment, which was really literature-based, but we went from, it kind of goes beyond just a literature review, and it kind of was a sort of standardized approach where we made an attempt to fill in information that we didn't know and highlight uncertainties. So, you know, what do we understand about the impacts of fixed gears on different types of habitat features and that kind of thing? And it, going through that process kind of really allowed us to identify what we know and what we don't know. There's obviously a large spatial component to the SASE approach. Within this domain, we look at what are the underlying substrates, what is it a high or a low energy area, and then what is the fishing effort in that area. And the output resolution of SASE is at 100 kilometer squared resolution, and I think as we go forward in this process, that's something to kind of think about and keep in mind, because some of the areas that have been proposed through the PDT and advisory panel committee process is are larger than that, and some are kind of around that same spatial scale. So something we're going to need to wrestle with is sort of how do we use these quantitative results in a way that kind of matches the resolution of the areas we're looking at. And this it may get a little tricky. So what goes into the SASE model? Phishing effort by a number of different gear types. We have data which is really based on the trip report data set from 96 through the present. And so that's on that regular grid that I talked about. That's 100 kilometers squared per cell. We also have energy, substrate, and some inferred structural features that feed into the base of the model. These are just some graphical depictions of those. On the left, you see trawl fishing effort in, I think, 2010. And the darker colors are higher concentrations of effort. On the top right, you see which areas are classified as low or high energy. Obviously, it's really a gradient, but for modeling purposes, it's one or the other. And then the bottom right panel shows you the sediment classification that goes into SASE. The outputs at the scale of the 100-kilometer grid include a few different things. The first one, the vulnerability, is really what we, and then the clusters of those vulnerability outputs are really what we focused on when we developed this range of options. And then also something that will sort of come more into play as we move forward with the analysis of the impacts of these options in terms of habitat, or what are the past and kind of future projected realized adverse effects when you take into account where fishing is occurring, the density of that fishing effort. And then something else that's been developed is kind of looking and trying to draw a comparison between the underlying habitat characteristics and their vulnerability, and then also the amount of effort and the value in terms of revenue that's coming out of those areas. And you know, this is kind of one of the many tools we can use in the analysis to help us evaluate trade-offs between habitat protection and revenues and economic considerations and social considerations. So these just kind of a graphical depiction of some of the outputs. On the left, this is kind of the analog to the distribution of the trawl fishing effort that was in the top left panel of the other slide. But rather than effort, this shows you what we project as the adverse effects to benthic habitats from that gear type. So it's kind of a generic trawl. It doesn't include shrimp and squid and raised footwork trawls, but all other trawling effort in the region. And the reason that it's kind of more filled in than the single year of just the regular area swept is that SASE makes an assumption that impact will occur in one year, and then depending on the habitat types and the associated features, that impact will sort of continue until those habitat features recover. And so you have this kind of retained habitat impact that kind of moves its way through the model over time. We have some simulations that are kind of graphical images that show you kind of how that changes over time that I think I've shown at previous council meetings, or maybe Chad did. On the top right, you can see the sort of fishing density independent look at where are the vulnerable habitats. And so what's really coming out here is if you have that gear type and it interacted evenly sort of across the model domain at depths at which we think it can operate, so that's why it doesn't go all the way out to the EEZ and fill in the whole domain, which are the areas that are going to be most vulnerable to that gear type. And so the areas that we predict would be most vulnerable are the redder colors, and then the areas that are predicted to be less vulnerable are the bluer colors. And then on the bottom right, it's basically the clustered output, running the top right panel through the clustering analysis. And that kind of asks the question of, so which of those cells in the top right are the highest vulnerability locations? And then what it really focuses on is, okay, well, which of those are near other cells that are also high vulnerability? And the reason we took that step rather than just trying to look at the top right panel, look at the raw outputs, was because in terms of area-based management, you're interested in which cells are adjacent to each other and cluster together and might make sense as kind of a larger management area. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this because I think we've sort of been this through this before, and this some of this came out in the various peer reviews, but really the main results were that the features associated with gravels come out as having a higher vulnerability, and then also the gears that sweep more area have a greater kind of magnitude of impact overall, and then the mobile gears are having a greater per unit area impact than the various fixed gears. So in terms of which of the many outputs of SASE to focus on when trying to develop a range of management measures, we were looking at the mobile gear SASE outputs. We assumed that kind of through the process of doing the literature review, we had no, the PDT had no reason to consider that, or to make the estimate that trawl and scallop dredge gears had a different per unit area impact from one another. So the outputs of the model for those two gear types are very much the same. So we focused on the trawl outputs, but we could have done it the other way. So that's kind of what we used as sort of a starting point for developing a range of management alternatives. So there's a couple of objectives that kind of follow directly from the results that we saw out of the SWIFT RAC that impact approach. And they're basically the, and these were kind of the objectives that the PDT, I think, had in mind as we were recommending a range of options to the committee. And those were to figure out where are the most vulnerable habitats, either because SASE indicates that they are, because we know that vulnerable habitat types occur in other areas, and maybe the we know that there are some issues with, say, the underlying model grid, so we wanted to bring in other data to make that inference. So the first objective is to figure out which of those areas are most vulnerable and try and come up with a way to protect those from the adverse effects of phishing. And then the second thing that comes out of the model is that part of what's driving the overall magnitude of adverse effects of phishing on the FH in our region is how much bottom is being contacted by various gear types. And so one way to try and reduce overall adverse effects of phishing on habitat is to reduce seabed area swept. And there's various different ways you could conceive of doing that. One is to shift to gear types that sweep less area, modify gear types, etc. And then another is to really try and focus on high catch per unit for phishing, which is going to allow you to take the same catch while reducing area swept. Obviously, there's a lot that goes into changing management systems to facilitate that, that goes well beyond what can be designed into the omnibus habitat amendment. So once we had the basic SASE results and the LISA outputs, we provided the committee with an assessment of what's the vulnerability of our existing habitat closures. We tried to characterize for the committee what's going on in terms of the, there was actually seven major of those LISA clusters that came out of the trawl outputs. So we talked about, you know, how dense are the data points in those areas? Were the sampling gears able to actually sample all of the substrate categories, or were they just focused on soft sediments? Things like that. And then also, you know, how deep are these areas? Are they high or low energy? What habitat types do we think are there? That kind of thing. And so kind of going through that process, we identified some other pieces of information that we felt were relevant and important, and kind of combined the LISA outputs with this additional information to come up with a set of areas that we wanted to recommend to the committee for potential management action. And so in some of the different documents and meeting summaries, you'll see those referred to as vulnerable areas. And sort of after we presented that to the committee, we've kind of gone back and forth over the past 12 months or so to kind of refine the different areas and think about what the boundaries should be with each of the areas, what habitat types are we really trying to focus on, and how does that balance with potential kind of resource access considerations. So the left-hand panel there with this sort of blue-green areas is kind of where the PDT started in terms of saying to the committee, here's the areas that the SASE model indicates to us, or this, you know, additional extra SASE information indicates that are likely more to phishing than average. And so these are areas where you might want to develop some options to minimize adverse effects. And so where we are now is the right-hand panel. And I'm just going to go through quickly what those different options are, because obviously they're a little hard to see on the two smaller figures. So these are the current habitat areas. This excludes the two canyon areas on Lydonia and Oceanographer Canyon, which really have a better nexus with corals and haven't really received a lot of discussion in an adverse effects minimization context at the committee level. So starting from the north, Jeffrey's Bank, there's no ground fish mortality closure in that location. It's just a habitat closure from Movement 13, and there's an option to maintain it the way it's shown here or to modify it, which you'll see on the next slide. The Cache's Ledge area, that's the existing closure. I know it's not really in context. You can't kind of see how large or small it is. There's an option to maintain it the way it is or to modify the western boundary and move it eastward. The Western Gulf of Maine, there's an option in the document to maintain it the way it is, to eliminate it, or there's kind of two options to modify it, to focus just on Jeffrey's Ledge or to focus better on Stellwagen Bank, and with both of those, the modifications kind of eliminate the parts that are in really in deeper waters and focus in on the gravel habitats on the top of the Stellwagen Bank and on top of Jeffrey's Ledge. Closed area 1, 2 in the Lightship closed area have an option to maintain them the way they are, to eliminate them. So just to go into detail about some of the newer areas, this is Jeffrey's Bank. You can see just the outline. This one, this is the current area, and then the shaded area is the new area. We have some data that indicate boulder and other types of larger grain size substrates that we think are harboring the sort of more vulnerable epifauna. And so those are in these kind of shallower areas, sort of on the tops of the bank there. And so this modified area is designed to really encompass those shallower locations. The Cache's Ledge region, there's a couple of different things going on. So this is the existing Cache's Ledge habitat closure. This is the Cache's Ledge groundfish mortality closure. Some of the modifications that were suggested by the committee would be to shift this boundary here. This is the 100-meter curve, and that really kind of captures where the ledge is. And then this is mostly deeper waters over here to the west, and so there's a suggestion to modify that boundary. This yellow area here is the shallowest part of Cache's Ledge, and there's a lot of concentration of kelp habitat there, and it's a very unique place in the Gulf of Maine, and so there's a suggestion to have enhanced protections here in this Ammon Rock area. And then finally, this is Fippenese Ledge. We'd kind of gone back and forth with sort of a range of different options for Fippenese, you know, based on depth, and this option here really focuses on the areas where we have optical sampling that indicates large grain-sized substrates occurring there and the features that would be associated with those that are more vulnerable to phishing. This is Platts Bank. So there's basically sort of two kind of shallow high points on Platts Bank, and those that have those, again, habitat types with the substrate types that we would expect to be more vulnerable to fishing gear impacts. And so this option is kind of a combination of these two areas and to focus on those types of substrates. And this area is currently open to fishing, whereas the previous Fippenese, as part of the groundfish mortality closure, is now pretty much closed, which is why it was called out in the groundfish committee motion that was discussed earlier. Here's Jeffrey's Ledge. This is the northern part of the Western Gulf of Maine habitat closure. There's my pointer. So you can see, I mean, I'm sure many of you are familiar with kind of the shape of the ledge, but this, you know, is shallower and it has the kinds of substrates that and associated fauna that we believe are more vulnerable to fishing. This northern sort of western part of the Jeffries Ledge area is deeper. It's more dominated by muddy substrates. Historically, there was some shrimping effort there amongst other types of fishing activities. So this modification is designed to really focus on the shallower, harder bottomed areas and to open up to mobile gear fishing the deeper, muddier areas to the northwest. This is part of sort of the northeastern part of Stellwagen Bank. Part of the bank is kind of off of the slide, but the shaded area basically is a sort of subset of the current Western Gulf of Maine habitat closure. And the reason it doesn't go all the way quite to the boundary of the current closure is that we have a multi-beam map of this area that basically goes to here, and so and also it starts to get a bit deeper once you go past this, but the our sort of best knowledge about where hard bottom is within this region is within the domain of that multi-beam sampling. So we felt most confident in recommending within that area as an adverse effects minimization alternative. Moving on to George's Bank. So this is the northern edge of the bank, which I'm sure will receive some additional discussion today. This is the top of closed area 2, and the this area here is both a habitat closure and a habitat area of particular concern. And then to the west of here, Georgia Shoal itself is somewhere around here, but all these actually were given the name Georgia Shoal. And so this is the what's referred to as the Georgia Shoal East area. This is the Georgia Shoal West area. And then this is a kind of a large area that encompasses both. This large area is unique amongst the areas I've discussed today in that it's only proposed as a ground cable length limited area. And so the idea here, and we're going to be working on this next month with the advisory panel and the PDT, is to figure out what would be an appropriate maximum ground cable length. And by setting that maximum ground cable length, the concept would be that you'd be sort of reducing the linear effective width of the gear. And if catchability were the same, then you would end up reducing area swept overall. So there's a lot of different assumptions that go into that type of an analysis to develop those alternatives. That's what we're going to hopefully kind of work through with the advisory panel. But in any case, this larger area is designed with that in mind. Whereas there would be an option to either do that kind of a ground cable modification or a mobile gear closure in these darker colored areas. Sort of between the Nantucket Lightship closure and closed area 1, kind of east of Cape Cod and sort of west of the deepest part of the Great South Channel, there's a few different areas that were designed around where we find boulder and other types of substrates. These are shown here. I attempted to give them names that would hopefully be sort of relevant to people rather than Great South Channel 1, 2, 3, and 4. and again, the alternatives for these areas are both are either to have them as a mobile bottom tending gear closure or as these ground cable length limited areas. And what's been discussed by the committee for all these areas is that for locations that have one or more sub areas like Platts Bank or like Georgia Shoal or like here on the channel, that you could sort of mix and match and have one or more of these. And the way that the PDT is going to be, at least at this stage, analyzing them is individually and trying to characterize the sort of potential habitat benefits that would be associated with management areas in each of these individually. And then as we go forward in the analysis with groups of alternatives, we'll try and get what would some of the cumulative effects be. And then finally, furthest to the south, this is Cox's Ledge. So you can kind of see where we are for reference if you're not familiar. Currently, Cox's Ledge is, this area is also currently open to fishing, as is Georgia Shoal. Cox's Ledge is really this kind of southwestern area, and then this is what's been called 19 Fathom Bank. And originally we had kind of one larger area and incorporated one of the MESA clusters that came out of the SASE outputs, and then really wanted to focus on the two areas most likely to contain those substrates and habitat types of interest. And again, this has the potential for mobile bottom to main gear closure options or these ground cable length modifications.
I know that this is informational, but if there's going to be some time for feedback, I'm going to ask that we get it wrapped up in the next 15 minutes.
Yeah, I just have a couple more things. So something that the committee did last month was to sort of bring these options together and start to give some kind of sense of how they would like to see them implemented in combination. So this is, you've seen this earlier, this is the no action option with the current areas. These are all of the, either the modifications, so the modifications of Jeffrey's Bank or Cache's Ledge or the Western Gulf of Maine combined with the new areas. And they're listed there, and they're the ones I just explained. And then alternative three would be some subset of those either new or modified options. And the idea was to go forward. I mean, and all this is kind of pending on what happens through the groundfish element of the process and what kind of advice we get there, but to kind of go forward with an alternative that includes all the options, get some public comment, and then sort of select from those after public comment. The next steps, as was mentioned, was to review the feasibility of the ground cable length limit options. Maybe those are appropriate for some areas and not others. To talk about the different species that might occur in those areas and what lengths might be appropriate, in terms of the gear types that are already used and that would provide some habitat benefits. The PDT has been working on a range of dedicated habitat research area alternatives, and we are going to present those on the 10th, and then hopefully the committee can approve those at their next meeting, which hasn't been scheduled yet, but should be probably in November or December. The groundfish closed area technical team has been working on assembling information and developing objectives related to groundfish element of area management. And so they're going to continue to do that work and present advice to the groundfish plan development team and committee. And then eventually, early next year is what we're planning right now. There's going to be a joint process between the groundfish and the habitat committees to look at these areas that I've just shown you and also whatever range of area management options come out of the groundfish process and see how those overlap or don't and can be reconciled. And then those combined options will be packaged into alternatives and come back to the council for approval at some point next spring. So that's all I have. Thank you.